Hello and welcome to Synopsis, your weekly roundup of news and analysis from ONFIF around the world. Coming to you from ONFIF headquarters here in the City of London, I'm Julian Fraser. Today we're discussing the Federal Reserve versus President Donald Trump, the IMF under Managing Director Christine Lagarde, and the dollar's reserve currency role. All that, and more besides, coming up next. And welcome to this week's edition of Synopsis. In an article published on the freshly redesigned ONFIF website, our US editor Daryl Delamade wrote about how William Dudley, the former head of the New York Federal Reserve, broke with the sacred traditions of central bank independence by urging the Fed to block the re-election of President Donald Trump. The New York Fed president is ex officio the vice chair of the policymaking Federal Open Market Committee, and the only regional bank chief who is a permanent voting member because of New York's role in conducting the market operations to implement monetary policy. When someone as steeped in central bank tradition as Dudley breaks with that to encourage the Fed to push its way into politics, everyone notices. Dudley's argument in a recent op-ed was that the Fed should stop playing Trump's game of cutting interest rates as the president ratchets up tariffs, allowing him to raise them even further. Fed officials could state explicitly that the central bank won't bail out an administration that keeps making bad choices on trade policy, Dudley said. Fed spokesperson Michelle Smith was quick to reject Dudley's proposal, affirming that political considerations play absolutely no role in Fed policy decisions. More emphatically, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers blasted Dudley's remarks as possibly the least responsible statement by a former financial official in decades, calling it an example of Trump derangement syndrome. In his Jackson Hole speech, Fed Chair Jerome Powell made it clear that the central bank is ready to take action to keep the economy on a growth path, even as he attempted to avoid being scapegoated by putting the onus on administration trade policy. Dudley's remarks, however, have muddied the situation for Fed policymakers. Before, they were worried that cuts to accommodate the economy might look like they were bending to Trump's will. Now, they can worry that not cutting rates will look like they are taking Dudley's advice and trying to thwart Trump, even at the cost of hurting the economy. In another article, Delisle Worrell, the former governor of the Central Bank of Barbados, and now a member of the Financial Policy Council of the Monetary Authority of Bermuda, wrote about countries' relations with the International Monetary Fund. Policymakers the world over have long dreaded engagements with the IMF, wrote Delisle, because fund assistance has often come with conditions that worsen matters domestically. Albeit that countries only end up at the fund's doorstep through the fault of their own policies, in the Caribbean, Africa, and Latin America, the IMF board has approved adjustment programs that involve punishing targets for fiscal adjustment in pursuit of unrealistic targets for debt reduction. The international policy community accepts that the preferred path out of economic crisis is to restore growth, along with whatever measures are necessary to stabilize prices and the balance of payments. But recent programs agreed with the IMF lack convincing growth-enhancing policies, so the full burden of adjustment falls on fiscal contraction. That, more often than not, causes the failure of the program or a domestic recession. The fund's standard recipe of monetary independence, flexible exchange rates, economic diversification, and sustainable debt does not address the competitiveness that propels growth or the fiscal discipline that settles markets. The extended fund facility for Barbados, signed a year ago, is a case in point. The facility, which was rushed through the IMF board approval process, supports a program of punishing fiscal austerity and aggressive debt restructuring. The latter, Delisle writes, has wiped out the Barbados dollar bond market with no credible measures to address public sector inefficiencies that hurt the country's competitiveness and impede both investment and growth. Mark Sobel, our US chairman, wrote a further piece for the ONFIF website about the dollar, specifically how President Trump's deluge of tweets about unfair currency practices has raised questions about whether the dollar's reserve currency and financing roles harm US trade accounts. Putting a positive spin on it, Trump said, "Massive amounts of money from China and other parts of the world is pouring into the US for reasons of safety, investment, and interest rates." But the Washington Post noted recently that growing recession concerns had prompted the White House to discuss a currency transaction tax to cheapen the dollar. One approach to determine if the dollar's reserve currency and financing roles harm US trade accounts is to examine the IMF's current account norms in its external sector report. A country's norm aggregates many factors, including the soundness of its policies, demographics, strength of institutions, net foreign asset positions, growth prospects, and reserve currency status. The dollar's reserve currency role pulls down the US current account norm by around 2 percentage points of GDP in the deficit direction, much more so than any other country. This is because the depth and liquidity of US capital markets increase global dollar demand, strengthening the dollar and allowing the country to run larger current account deficits. Exorbitant privilege refers to the dollar's reserve currency role, allowing the US to run bigger external deficits. Proponents of this view argue the dollar's role allows the US to escape economic disciplines, harming the global economy. But others suggest the dollar's reserve role is also an indestructible curse, insofar as it means the US is prone to running persistent trade deficits, hurting domestic jobs and workers. On balance, the dollar's reserve and financial roles benefit the US, but the opposite could be true of currency transaction taxes. These could be particularly detrimental to the openness of the US's financial system. Looking ahead to some forthcoming meetings on the ONFIF calendar, next week sees us hosting roundtables in Asia, the UK, and US. In Singapore on Wednesday the 18th of September, Ahmed Saeed, Vice President of the Asian Development Bank, will discuss climate-resilient infrastructure in the Asia-Pacific region. In London, also on Wednesday, a grand panel including, among many others, Otmar Issing, the former ECB Chief Economist, and Nathaniel Copsey, head of the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office's Europe Transformation and Expertise Department, will speak about refocusing EU-UK relations. Then, on Thursday in New York, ONFIF is hosting a discussion examining how the supposed Japanification of Europe helps to explain developments in the euro area economy. Details of all meetings can be found on the ONFIF website, and links to the relevant pages are also included in the description of this podcast. And while we're certainly keeping ourselves busy here, next week will be even more hectic for monetary policymakers and pundits, with the central banks of several major economies meeting over the 3 days between September 18th and September 20th. Aside from the Fed, Bank of England and Bank of Japan, the central banks of Brazil, Taiwan, Switzerland, Norway, Indonesia, South Africa, Ghana, and Mongolia will also convene. And that is all the time we have for today's edition of the ONFIF Synopsis. To read in greater detail about what we discussed, visit www.omfif.org. And if you'd like to receive our editorial output and details about forthcoming meetings with policymakers around the world, sign up at omfif.org/subscribe. And as ever, do feel free to email any questions whatsoever you might have for me and my colleagues at analysis@omfif.org. I'm Julian Fraser. Thank you for listening.